Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and today I have a guest returning to the show to talk about his latest upcoming project from Aftershock Comics. He first debuted on comic stands in 2016 with Eclipse. It was planned on as a four-issue mini, but the success quickly prompted Top Cow to continue it as an ongoing series. It lasted 16 issues. It's currently being developed for TV by Robert Kirkman and Skybound. His sophomore comic effort, Port of Earth, also published by Image Comics and Top Cow, came out in November of 2017. And as we've talked about on this show, it explores the fascinating question of what happens when aliens come to Earth not to conquer or to teach, but with a business deal. It's also in development for TV, and I should mention his previous effort at Aftershock, The Lost City Explorers, has also been bought by Universal TV and is in development. So he's written Nightwing for DC Comics. He's taught screenwriting at the International Academy of Film and TV, located in the Philippines. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the show my friend, writer Zach Kaplan.
Thank you very much.
Ah, it's great to have you on, man. It's great been a while. We were back. Just talking about that.
Yeah, great to be back.
So we're going to talk about, as I said, your latest project from Aftershock Comics. It's called Join the Future. Release date of March 4th for issue number one. And we're going to get into these ideas that you're exploring in the book and your collaborators on the team. But before we get to that, Zach, I want to be sure that everybody knows the best place to engage with you online. I know you love talking to fans and hearing reactions to from readers to your work. So where are you most active on social media if people want to reach out?
Yeah, definitely Twitter. You can find me across all social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Zach Kaps, ZACKKAPS. And yeah, hit me up. Whether you have a question about it coming out or when you get your hands on it.
Yeah, so let's let everybody know what Join the Future is all about. What's the elevator pitch for the series, so to speak?
Yeah, it takes place in the future here in America, and it's based on a very realistic trend of people moving from small towns and rural America into the big cities. And so 50 years from now, this trend has all but culminated in these massive mega cities that offer every technological advance and comfort that you could imagine, from vertical farming to healthcare, and everyone is given a universal basic income, which Andrew Yang has made now popular and more understandable. And basically, it's a wonderful, every need is met, and these cities are competing against one another. And the way they do this is by population. The more people a city has, the stronger they are economically. And there are only but a few small towns and a few rural residents left in the American countryside that still enjoy their self-sufficiency and independence. And it focuses on one of these last remaining towns, a town of Franklin, and the mayor, who does not want to sell his people to one of these big cities, because there's a demand for people to give up their small town living and join these big cities. And the story centers on a young teenage girl, Clementine Libby, and she's basically tested on her principles and how far she'll go in this strange world, whether she'll join or she'll hold out. And it's a very epic, grand sci-fi Western, and we're kind of looking at this future mix of genres here. So that's the elevator pitch.
Yeah, I love the fact that you take these ideas that seem sort of black and white on the surface, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. But the big idea here, I got a chance to preview the first issue, and I'm reading it, and it starts off, and we're kind of getting the pitch from these cities about why we should, you know, move to one of these mega cities. Yes. And all this stuff is sounding great, you know, healthcare, and you know, you're provided for, and you get the choice to further your education and do all these different things. You know, poverty and crime, all that's very much diminished. And it sounds like somewhat of a utopia or a paradise. So I'm thinking, you know, why wouldn't you join up? But, you know, me knowing you and how you like to really dig into these ideas, I know it's not going to be as simple as that. So when you talk about this big idea you're exploring, is it advancement of humanity versus the traditions that make us who we are as a society? What is the big idea, if you could distill it down to kind of, you know, one sort of aspect versus another, to you as the creator? What is it exploring?
I think there's a lot of classic verses going on here, whether it's advancement versus, you know, your own personal traditions, the classic city versus country, you know, and the city offers all the advancement and civilization, but the country offers a peacefulness and a tranquility of the soul, a dependency versus independency, you know, that the future has a lot to offer, whether it's medical advancement or technological advancement. But the more that we create these things, the more dependent we are. And I myself am, I grew up as a small town kid in the Midwest in the Quad Cities, cornfields right across the way. And it was a very different idealistic upbringing. And I just think that, you know, and I just think that there's a lot of value in each, and there's quite a difference. But I you know, in terms of what is the large theme and the large question of each of these places, and what is the big city offering, I would say it's this is a story about freedom and the freedom to choose the lifestyle you want. And I think that as the world moves so fast on us and technology advances, and we suddenly find ourselves glued to our phones, we suddenly find ourselves connected and sharing our data, and we are plugged in and everything's moving so fast, we're not really thinking about it. And I think there's a lot of value in choice and independence and self-sufficiency still. And it's kind of exploring that dichotomy.
See, what, you know, and what I find so interesting about this, I think it's our generation, the generation that you and I grew up in, we're sort of the bridge to a simpler time, if you will. And I know you can always look back with rose colored glasses, but, you know, when I was a kid, cause again, I similar to you, I grew up in a very small town. And now I live in Phoenix, you know, very much a metropolitan area. You grew up in a small place, and now you live in Southern California, you know, maybe one of the biggest metro areas in the world. But when I was a kid, it was, you know, get on your bike and go out on Saturday, and you didn't have to come home till the sun came down, you know, and we didn't have a computer in our pocket. And it was very much, you know, it felt safe, and it felt, you know, a little Norman Rockwell. But now, you know, we're at a point where we do have all these advances. And, you know, I work IT for a living. You're there in LA, you know, film, TV industry, entertainment industry, very much dependent on technology. And so I think that our generation has such a unique perspective on this, because we had one foot in the past. We're not of that generation that grew up with the internet. You know, we did our research for term papers and such in the library, you know, not on a computer screen. So I think that somebody like you of this generation is uniquely suited to tell a story like this. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I mean, I know that there's a trend with young people in sometimes rediscovering this way of life. I do read stories as I do research about millennials purposefully disconnecting and moving to live in, you know, the mountains or travel the world and try to disconnect. But yeah, you're right. The difference is I grew up at a time where I did not know anything. I didn't even actually have that choice. And younger people, whether they're in their teens or their 20s, are being presented with this very challenging choice of, do you disconnect and do you escape civilization, or do you connect to it? I can appreciate the value, and many young people may not. They may just be all in and not ever consider those realities of what would it mean to be disconnected from your phone or things like this. So yeah, I definitely think I have that perspective, but I think that that perspective and that choice is prevalent even to today's youth. The question becomes, well, what if that choice evaporates over time? You know, what if you couldn't disconnect? What if you lived in a city, but there was no small town or mountain town to escape to? What if you couldn't function without your phone? What if you could not literally survive? I mean, there are probably some things that we could not go without. You know, could you really go without money or a credit card? You know, there are some things that a long time ago people would say, I don't need that. Now it becomes ever so more challenging. And so I'm always interested in future worlds where one change has happened, and to kind of consider how that might take away from our choices, our privileges. And it was a very fascinating topic to explore in the book. Absolutely.
You mentioned Clementine before. Would you say that this is her story? Is it more of an ensemble piece? Can you kind of give us a rundown on the cast?
No, it's definitely a very, very centric upon her story. I mean, I've found some comparison in a Katniss Everdeen, Hunger Games kind of way. You know, we see her world, and her small town world is populated by her family, and we see some of the antagonists coming in issue one, which I can speak to. But yeah, she's an older teenager, perhaps 17, 18. And, you know, she has known this way of life her whole life. She lives in this small town that is not only outside of these mega cities and outside of civilization, but the people of this small town are making a conscious choice not to use computers and networks and certain technology. I think they're ending they're drawing a line right. I don't know. I think they're probably open to using cars and trucks and some machines. But they're not interested in being so interconnected to computers and advanced technology. And they're treating it almost like the Amish would treat it in terms of you don't cross certain lines. This is just all she's known. And I think she respects her father, the mayor, and the community's way of life, but she doesn't truly understand it. And she definitely gets tested through the story and challenged and really has to ask herself what she really believes and what she really thinks. Is technology really so bad? Is this futurism really so bad? Is it okay to compromise, or is it important to stay true to your ideals no matter what? So it's very much about her soul-searching character arc as she's basically torn between what's happening to her town. And that is, there are these agents that the mega cities send out, and the agent's sole responsibility is to recruit and buy people who still live in the countryside and convince them to come to the city and offer them almost a contract of citizenship where they will receive housing and a job and a universal income and everything they could ever want. You know, they just have to join. And we soon find out that the agent is working along with the sheriff in this community and the lawmen to really apply tremendous pressure to the mayor and these people, and things get out of hand very quickly. And that puts Clementine on a collision course to make some very tough decisions and carve out her own way.
Now, when you're starting to develop this story, and clearly it's the story of Clementine and the decision she's going to have to make, how challenging was it for you to find her voice? Because clearly she's faced with this decision. You know, as you've said, how much does she try to hold on to the past, hold on to the traditions that her father espoused, versus going to one of these megacities, perhaps, and embracing.
I spent a minute with it because it was important to see. You know, she had to have some level of adolescence and that kind of not fully understanding, you know, some of this, the things that adults and her father and family might be saying. But I didn't want her to be such a rebellious soul that she had no respect for her community. So I spent a lot of time trying to draw a very complex young woman who you feel that she's perhaps a little bit lost, and yet she has some real loyalty and identity to where she comes from. And I think that that duality was really important. I really strive to try to hone in on that, because that creates so much more conflict as she's torn between the way of life that she's known and this future way of life. And, you know, does she feel drawn to the city? What is the future hold? What, imagine if you have never experienced the future, how alluring it would be to try it. And then you have a very didactic kind of closed-minded community that says, don't step over the line. And so, she was definitely a complex character to get, but I definitely feel like I had a lot of fun once she came to me, you know, capturing her voice and spending a lot of time with her. I mean, she's definitely my favorite character in the whole story. There's one other character that she encounters later that we get a taste of here, and that is a very grizzled older trader, like a merchant, who roams the countryside, and he ends up dealing in technology. He scavenges technology from all over the rural America, and he ends up being a character that she interacts with quite a lot. Although there's a lot of tension in that relationship as well, and I had a lot of fun when she finally got to him to write that two-hander. Yeah, she's definitely the soul of the story.
Now, how can I ask this? Do you have a preference? I know you're trying to present both sides, we kind of are seeing the story through the eyes of Clementine. So at least in the first issue, it did seem to skew more of seeing the rural, smaller towns as the good guys, for lack of a better term. And I know it's not black and white. We're going to talk about that in a second as well. But for you, with you know, the way and generation you grew up in, as we discussed, is there a side that you identify with more? And was there a challenge presenting one side over the other?
I mean, I love my technology. You know, I'm hooked in. I get the new iPhone, whatever. I like anything that adds to convenience for me. I'm like, ooh, Wi-Fi thermostats. That sounds fancy. Like, how does that work? Like, I love as much convenience and modernity as possible. I think I also like stories where individuals are thrust up against society, and in a way that they feel forced and they don't have the choice. I like stories of institutions and the individual that dares to ask other questions about it. And I think for me, I like the freedom to make my own choices. I don't like being told what to do. I don't like not having a choice. And so I think that both of these communities, whether it's the alluring, interconnected, sign me up, put the technology right in my veins, take my data, take care of me, take my privacy, make everything comfortable and easy for me. There's a lot of value there. And I think there's a lot of value in the small town, look up at the stars, know how to make your own furniture, know how to live your own life, make your own food, know how to cook for yourself. I think there's value in both worlds. I think what is really important is the choice. And I get anxious or concerned about futures where those types of choices are taken away from us. So I think what's great is being able to not be told that you must join the future, that the future is coming and you must join. I think what's great is to be able to pick which future you want to be a part of and which you don't.
Now, what made you decide that you wanted to examine this idea? Was it the fact that you yourself, you know, as you mentioned, you love the technology, but you also love that independence and that, you know, that choice, that the ability to, yeah, to make that choice. Was that what interested you most in telling the story?
Yeah. And I think growing up, you know, as a small town, you know, kid, and having that 80s Spielbergian on bikes type of environment, and then being attracted to technology. And then I think in recent years, suddenly realizing, oh, wait a minute, what about my data? Wait a minute, what are social media platforms doing? Wait a minute. You just start to feel like all the technology that we welcomed in the 2000s, that we don't have control over it anymore. And also as a futurism enthusiast, I liked reading about different trends in the future. And one trend I found very interesting was just the collapse of small towns. I don't know what will happen, but there is a lot of data and research to suggest that this trend will only continue in very dramatic fashion. You know, without getting political, I just think that in general, you see the wear of globalization and things affecting this kind of stuff. And so, yeah, just made me kind of go, well, what about this future where cities are so dominant? And it all just kind of came together. It's hard, you know, I don't really think about theme first when I examine an idea. It more comes to me as a concept. And it was the concept of this big mega city versus this small town, and the collapse of the small town. And I think once I got in the weeds of plotting and structuring and thinking about the story, it became clear to me that this was about you know, dependency versus independence. And I very much related to that theme and very much connected to that topic. So yeah, I was passionate. I am very passionate about the story and exploring all that.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, tradition versus the future, obviously, you know, providing and being sure everybody has, you know, food and clothing and basic needs, you know, in whichever way you're going to do that, whether it's just providing those things in somewhat of a socialist environment or some sort of universal sustenance, or it's because you're living in a small town and people just lend a helping hand toward the neighbor. You can go either way. It's not saying one is better than the other.
Right.
Clearly, it's not an idea that has a definitive answer. And when you start looking at some of the other ideas, big ideas that you've explored in your stories, and again, like you said, you don't start off with this question. It's not theme first. It's always character first, story first. But certainly discussions we've had about Port of Earth and what choice, if we were given, would we make in terms of, you know, allowing this technology to come in when we're maybe giving up some things that we necessarily shouldn't. All these are really complex ideas. They're not ideas that are real simple with black and white answers. What do you think it is about your storytelling style that you gravitate toward exploring these really interesting and complex ideas that you can find yourself thinking about long after you've put the comic down and long after you finish reading it?
I think, you know, when I watched movies and TV shows and read comics, the things that I was most attracted to were not the ones that allowed me just to escape, but that made me think. And I think the ones that made me think posed questions and did not answer them for me. And that let me leave that experience forming my own answers. I mean, some of my favorite memories in relationship to story are arguing with other people that saw the same thing or read the same thing about what it meant to me versus what it meant to them and what the right answer was. And I think that that is so important to us as audience and readers, to be able to talk to each other and argue and communicate and share our ideas and think. And so that's just the kind of story I like. I don't need it to be super heavy or super dark. I just want to be able to think about it myself, and I guess have the freedom to make my own choice and determination about it. And so when I write something, I don't want to cross the line of into preachiness and tell my readers and my fans what they should think. I want to say, if this was the world, what would you think and what would you do, and let them decide. And I just think that that creates a richer, it creates the type of experience that I enjoy, and that's what I'm trying to share with people.
So in a way, you're saying, okay, I'm gonna write this story, I'm gonna put it out there, and what you're hoping for is that the people that experience it, you know, your fans, the people that are picking up the stories, they're then gonna reach out and open the dialogue, right? Say, okay, Zach, you've presented this idea and this story, here's what we think, let's talk about it.
Either to me or just with one another. I mean, I would love nothing more than to hear that two comic book readers were standing in line at a shop with Join the Future issue 2, and they both said they had read it. And one person said, you know, how can anyone think about joining that mega city? And the other one said, how could anyone not? You know, that dialogue, that's special to me. And so if I am able to say, and I know I've talked to people who said that they had those conversations with Port of Earth, you know, how could we make that deal? What choice did we have? And it creates this kind of, you know, thought provoking, interesting conversation about what makes us human and the types of choices we make, because we're all trying to figure this stuff out. And, you know, so that's exactly, you know, whether it's with me or with each other, if I'm able to not just entertain someone, but create something that makes them think, that's everything for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I agree. We've talked about it before, I think we both feel that, the stories we tell, the fiction that we create, it will tell future generations, whether that's here on Earth or, you know, somewhere out there, it tells so much about who we are as a society at that time. It's everything, the stories that we
tell. One thing like with Join the Future versus Port of Earth. Port of Earth, I took a very omniscient perspective to it. And that story was told with that, you know, we've talked about it with this device of almost like you're watching everything unfold in CNN. Mm-hmm. And this kind of watching the footage, seeing the news all unfold, watching these agents, we never actually feel like we're with these characters and we're not being watched, or we're not with the cameras. And that distanced, I think, readers from those characters in some way. And so with Join the Future, I was very excited to not have that device and to really be able to spend some real heartfelt time with Clementine. And really create a very nuanced, complex young woman, because once she goes through this journey, I think seeing her torn, and man, I don't want to give spoilers away, but she has a very tough road ahead of her. And, you know, that makes the debate about what would you do all hard. You know, it's just so hard. And I can't wait for people to get to issue 2 or issue 3 and see some of the dilemmas that start to unfold for her. Jace, you remember talking about Port of Earth, you know, issue 1 sets up the complexity of the concept, but the more I go, the more I get into the character dilemma and where that's where I also love exploring, complexity without offering what's right and what's, you know, there's an ambiguity to that as well. And, her road has equally hard choices to make. And so I'm excited to hear fans and readers torment themselves about what she should be doing. So, yeah, I'm very excited about Join the Future, and hopefully the conversations it'll prompt.
Yeah, I can't wait to read more. I mean, like I said, those first few pages, everything they were saying, I was like, yeah, I'm in 100%. But I'm like you, I'm fiercely independent. If it was, yes, you can have all these things, you can have technology and, this level of security, but it means you don't get to be free, and we're constantly going to be telling you what to do, man. I would be the first one to be, building the rebellion, so to speak.
But how do you rebel when you're rebelling for your ideals, and your ideals are anti-technology and anti-future?
Exactly.
How do you go up against the future without joining it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I can't wait to see how you explore it. And you do have a really good artist on the series as well. I want to talk about your artistic collaborators on the series. Peter Kowalski is handling the line work, and then you have Brad Simpson on color. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So how did those guys get involved in the project?
I've been a huge fan of Peter's for a while. Some of his work on I'll say we should really describe them as a pair, because they've done many books together, Bloodborne, and I think there's several. I can't come to mind, and I don't want to misspeak. But they've done several books together. They're unbelievable together. There's something to be said for when an artist and a colorist find synergy and an understanding of how to work together. And these two guys, not only do they create great work on their own, but they create incredible work together. And so I was a big fan of their work together, and I saw their work, and I was just blown away. I reached out to Peter and I said, I love your stuff. I'd love to work with you. And everything in this game is timing. He just happened to be available. He said he would love to do something. We started talking about the idea, and it all came together. And then Brad was available. Obviously, I was over the moon for them to work together, and that's it. They're amazing. They're, the line work, it was really important for me that it had a mix of realism and detail, and we wanted to capture this duality of the sci-fi futuristic city and then this kind of open, free kind of countryside, and Peter just... he had done Westerns and sci-fi. So he did Sex for Image, which was sci-fi. And he did Badlands was, I think, the name of it. And he just nailed both styles. And Brad completely understood what we were going for the colors. The city is, almost sterilely beautiful. And the country is warm and inviting. And he got it. I just love seeing pages come in every day. It's fantastic. I'll also say one more thing, Jace. We also got Hassan Otsmane Elhau, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, who is a letterer and also an Eisner winning comic journalist. But he does a fantastic job on the letters. I've only worked with Troy Pateri before. But I got the chance to see Hassan's work at Aftershock, and he just brought a really cool sensibility to the letters, and letterers never get enough credit for how they bring an artistry to the story as well. So it's seamless and fantastic as well. So yeah, I got spoiled with another great creative team.
Yeah, when you first approached the guys and told them what the story was about, was it one of those situations where they immediately it kind of clicked, like they understood the aesthetic you were going for and the fact that you were really telling a story, like you said before, with a lot of classic ideas that were classic?
I'm too passionate when it comes to the story stuff. I know there's a lot of, and this, it slows my productivity. I just can't help it. And so, I spend a lot of time picking lots of visual references and sending a lot of different explanations about the look of everything. You know, here's what the city's going to look like. Here's what, here's the type of technology you will see and the type of technology you won't see. We don't have flying cars, but we do have, drones might dot the sky. I just really go overboard when it comes to giving the artists as much information as they could need. And you know, whatever they want to take, they can take. But in the beginning, I think, I didn't need any of that. I think, I told them the idea, and I think the idea was exciting enough. We'd have to ask Peter, what it was. I don't know. I pitched him the idea. I said, you available? Here's this idea. It's a sci-fi Western, but it's not Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cheesy sci-fi Western. Like, we don't have like steampunk guns. Like, this is like real grounded, gritty. Like, I don't even know what that was another thing too. And trying to find comic, film, or TV references that would mirror this. I always have this problem. I always smash together like genres in a weird way. And then it's like, well, how the heck do I explain this? Like Lost City Explorers. It's like kind of Goonies, but modern. So it's like, Euphoria, but not dark. And then it's like kind of got like an adventure thing, like Stranger Things, but again, not nostalgic. It's just so hard to figure out sometimes this stuff. But I think they were in from the pitch, and then I gave them a ton of stuff to work with. And then at a point, I think that that's the great thing about letting artists visualize this stuff and let it come to life. They make it their own, and it's amazing when it comes out. This is Peter and Brad's world. And, I'm just helping guide the visual, but they've crafted an amazing world. There's some really cool elements that come out too that we haven't even introduced yet. Like one example is all the, when the towns are completely bought out and all the people move to a big city and all that's left is this abandoned town, they actually send these massive terraforming machines to come and basically transform these small towns into just natural preserves, just like nature. And there's some really cool images in later in the books, really cool sci-fi stuff about these machines and this terraforming process. So,
yeah, that's briefly mentioned in the first issue, and I have to say that I thought the art on the first issue was amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You should go to our Twitter if you're listening and you want to see some of it. I mean, other than and Googling it, I think Brad just tweeted like the inks of the first page and then his colors. First off, shows how amazing he is as a colorist. But even the ink work shows how amazing Peter is. So and we've started to get some really great reviews. I'm very thankful for, and people can't stop talking about how gorgeous the book is. I definitely sing their praises, and I think that beyond hooking everybody on the story, I am thinking it's going to be one of the most beautiful books this spring. It's just gorgeous. They did such a good job. I'm so happy with it.
Yeah, I think both the line work that Peter's doing and the color work Brad's doing, this is a, as you said, a story of verses. It's the big city versus small town, and they do an incredible job of making them each look distinct and so different. It's interesting. I'd love to sit down and talk to them too about their approach. They must approach it differently, because sometimes you can tell when someone's doing a story like this where it's two kind of different settings, but it's still sort of the same aesthetic, sort of. But this looks so vastly different. You do get such a different feel for the scenes that we get early on in the city versus out in the woods and in the small town. That's something that struck me right away as I was reading the first issue. So I think you've chosen well when it's come to collaborators, because it's just a phenomenal job, and I can't wait to see more.
Thank you. I think some of my, that was one thing I picked up. I think some of my idols when it comes to, when it comes to collaborators, some of the creators that I really admire, like Rick Remender and stuff, when I look at how amazing their collaborators are over time, I realize that that's one of the most important decisions you make for the book. And so I slave thinking about who to collaborate with. It's so important to me. I mean, not just that it's a great artist, it's the right fit, it's the right voice, it's the right style. I take that really to heart. And my goal is to continue to collaborate with artists to the point that over the years, when people look at my work, every artist feels like the right pick for that book. You know, not trying to phone anything in. It's like really like the perfect casting. It's like casting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of artists you've worked with, I have to ask you, I saw a commission that Giovanni, the artist that you worked with on Eclipse, a Daredevil versus the Hand commission that he put up on Twitter recently. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was like, are you kidding me? If you haven't seen it, listeners, go check it out. Just search for Giovanni Timpano. I think it's at Gio Timpano, T-I-M-P-A-N-O, on Twitter. And you'll see it right away. It's Daredevil versus the Hand commission, and it's –
We've been working on something new in the background. And I'm hoping to get it going soon. But he's unbelievable. I mean, he's just got this level of detail to it. You know, Jeff Darrow West, that what he did there with all those little ninjas.
Thousands of ninjas, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, it was crazy. The other thing that I wanted, I don't, you know, we could go on for hours and hours, you know, how we do, but I don't want to keep you too much longer. But the other thing I do want to get your opinion on is, you know, you talk about finding the right artistic team to collaborate with. Obviously, the right publisher's important too. And this is your second series with Aftershock. What made them the right publisher for this story? And what is it that you enjoy about working with them?
Well, you know, I actually pitched this idea to them relatively the same time as Lost City Explorers. It just took longer to get this one going because I was looking for Peter and Brad. With a publisher, I think that they responded to the idea and they really liked it. And I don't know that I guess certain publishers have certain feels and can tell certain kinds of stories. I think what's most important is that a publisher is supportive of the vision that you and the other creatives are bringing to the story and bringing to the project. And Aftershock was extremely supportive from the very beginning. You know, they never tried to push us in any direction. They completely understood what we wanted to do with this. And they encouraged us the whole step of the way. And they gave us a lot of liberty and freedom. And they gave us great notes and feedback when it was important. And I think that, you know, a publisher that knows when to help and knows when not to help and knows when to support, that's a great find. And they were incredible every step of the way. So I guess that would be what made them a great publisher.
Awesome. Well, again, I loved the first issue. I thought that the art and the story were amazing, seamless in their integration. I can't wait to read more and see where the story goes. So best of luck with the series, Zach.
Thank you very much.
Doors open if you ever want to come on the show to talk about anything. And I'll just throw it to you one last time. Whether it's something about Join the Future or something else, anything else you would want our listeners to know about?
No. If you're excited about the book, go. I think the last chance to pre-order has already happened, but I'm sure it will help if you call your shop It's still an independent book. It's still Aftershock. And call a comic book shop. Tell them to set aside a copy for you. And thank you very much for checking it out.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I always talk about letting your stores know ahead of time what you want. There's so many books that come out these days. You're really helping your retailer out by letting them know what you're interested in. Like Zach said, even if the final order cutoff has already passed, you know, they can reach out to other shops in the area. They can reach out to Diamond and maybe make other arrangements.
Well, and a new trend that we're starting to see is that what they'll do is they'll place in more reorders and they'll right. start to up their orders, even though the Diamond distribution system will show that, that's the last chance. They'll still express interest, and that interest will get back to the publisher. And this is what inspires all of these second printings and third printings that you see happen sometimes when a book is so successful. That process happens even sometimes before the release of the book. And yep. So unfortunately we live in an antiquated system where the retailers carry this burden of how much they can have on the shelf. So the more you can tell a retailer or a comic book shop, hey, this is something I'm interested in and I would like to buy this and please put one aside for me, the better it helps everybody in the process.
Yeah, that's yeah, 100%, 100% true. So, again, Zach, thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you.
Don't forget, everybody, March 4th, Join the Future issue number one hits stands. So be sure to let your shop know you want a copy.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.